Now continuing the interview with Harriet and Keith. I'd like to talk about community life. What was farm life, but how about community life on the farm? Were there no farms around you?
There were certain farms around us. It was a whole farming community. It's like you could name the people by the family, by their last names, like the Haskins, there'd be some Haskins down the road, or the Whitfield families, the Hopgoods. You could literally drive down our road and know the different families that they all dairy farmed and raising the tobacco and so forth. So yes, it was a big farming community. We'd have barn raisins, getting together and cook Greenwich stews and things like that. So yeah.
Who would be at these events?
Just your different people down the community. The different farmers would be together that would come together to help you to do a barn raising. Like they would have the trees cutting logs, building log barns. I can see them building log barns and us sitting, meeting, together. It was the farm families and people that worked with them on the farm, their tenants were all working together to get this barn done that day or whatever. And we'd cook and eat and enjoy one another.
How about church community?
Church community was very prevalent there on our road. My daddy's family are Trinity Baptist, and where my daddy built my mother's home is just below my grandparents' home. And my father, before his death, had become an elder for the Trinity Baptist Church, which is good for more Trinity Baptist Church there in Stem. My mother is like, at the Trinity Baptist Church, you don't have like Sunday school classes like you would see at the Baptist Church or Methodist Church. My mother always encouraged us to go to Vacation Bible School at Tally Ho Baptist Church, which was just within walking distance from my home. And it was always a week-long of Vacation Bible School. And my sister and I would walk and go and attend that during the summer. And like the students or the kids there are kids that we went to school with. It's like some of my girlfriends at school were Methodist faith, and I was involved with them in their MYF groups. So religion and was a variety of religions, but it was all one and the same. To me, religion to me is more one of the same because of the different experiences as a child with the different kids in the community, whether they were Baptists or Methodists or whatever. I think we all blended together, and it was, a very nice, pleasant thing.
In your lifetime, how have you seen the changes go on in STEM? What do you think of STEM now when you go through it, when you see it, compared to what it was when you were growing up?
Well, it's changed an awful lot. Now it's a lot of development, housing developments is what I mean by developments. A lot of the farmland has become places where people have put mobile homes. I know a lot of the farm property that I've sold, they have either built homes or it's mobile homes on these places. The little town itself, it's gone down a lot. You just have your couple of country stores and your post office. It's just not the same. I think back as from a childhood, to me, it seemed to be more thriving, just healthier. I don't know if it's just my wishful thinking or what, it can be thriving well, but it just Just not the same.
How about the encroachment of larger cities or larger townships around it? What other areas or locations near where you grew up kind of swelled and grew and took over some of that?
Well, Butner, which was known as Camp Butner during World War II, it has grown like much and has changed, and Creedmoor has grown also. There are more restaurants and fast food places than there used to be. It's like I can remember where when you hear McDonald's today, well, McDonald's back then was McDonald's on Avondale Drive in Durham. So you're driving all the way to Durham to go to McDonald's. But now it's there's one there, I think, in Creedmoor. So things have changed quite much.
How about jobs? What happened to the jobs, the farming jobs? I know if the farms are disappearing, where are these people going to work?
Well, the I think farming is very different out there, in that people, you got your diehard tobacco farmers. You still have got some that born bred tobacco farmers that are still trying to make it thrive. Then you've got some that I think have faced the fact that we have got to make a change. Tobacco is bad for our health. And we've got to learn different ways to make a living, to use that property for something else, if it's growing some type of vegetable or something else for us to produce to make our living. So it's been very hard for someone who has been born and bred a tobacco farmer that's having to change to something new. But I think they just got to be open-minded about it and accept that things are changing and try to change with that and do something positive.
Were there any large employers in your area, any kind of public work that you could get with a large, there weren't universities, so were there any large public or state facilities that you could get work at in your area?
Well, the main state facilities that are around in Granville County area was like your Murdoch Center and John Upstead in Butner. Then we've had several federal prisons. There was like Pope Youth Center that was in Butner, but now we have, I think there's three large federal type prison facilities now that have grown out there now that a lot of people have gone to be, you know, seek employment there. And then you've got a couple like Northern Telecom that has a business out there. That's where a lot of people seek to have employment or went to Durham, GTE, Duke Power, just was seeking to have a good, steady employment.
Do you know any family members who, in your family, who got jobs at those locations?
No. A lot of my family members are teachers. My uncle and his wife were teachers for in the Greensboro school system. I have an aunt, Josephine, that's a teacher in the Durham County schools. So to really say that my family were like a lot of public workers, no. My grandmother, she worked as a postmaster in Grifton. But it's, when you think back, it's really amazing just how many really were teachers.
Was there any common institution that they attended to get their accreditation for this?
My uncle and my aunt and my mother all attended ECTC.
East Carolina Teachers College?
Yes. It's like they all attended there, and because my uncle and aunt, and it was like they grew up about 12 miles from Greenville in Grifton, and they all attended East Carolina Teachers University.
As we're drawing to the conclusion of this interview, I'd like to ask you a question about what four events or trends that happened in your lifetime should any North Carolina history class today cover, and why? What's important in North Carolina history to you that happened in your life?
Like desegregation, I think it's important for everyone, whether they're black, white, and today's Mexicans, it's important for everyone to have equal opportunity in education and to be treated fairly. This country was brought up on having rights, but also we should have equal education. I think where we've already gone through the changes from the whites and the blacks, that we're going to be seeking even more the same with another race, which is the Mexicans. I think we're still going to, the same thing is going to be happening, except it's going to be with the Mexicans. But it's just where America, we're forever changing. Our faces are steady changing. We're different looks of people, but we're all representing hopefully the same.
So you would want to cover in the schools desegregation and everything that entails as far as socially and trying to be together, how you define America?
Yes, I think everybody, education will help us all. But I want to emphasize that education is good. Whatever you learn, no one can take away from you. But I think also that hard works, our physical works, are just as important. And what I mean by that is where society, years ago, the blacks did a lot of things. Where you see the Mexicans doing today that are working in tobacco and everything. And the trend, for whatever reason, it always seems like we go back to someone else doing it. But I think it's important for all of us is to be exposed and to be capable of doing it. It's just like any new civilization. You're going to have your basis of cooking, providing, growing things, making things. Whether you're in civilization or not in civilization, whether you're white, black, Mexican, I mean, we need all of this. And I think everybody needs to be a rounded person to be capable to touch base and do a variety of these things. That is what makes you a rounded person. And for the well-being, I think, of everybody. Do not think that you are too good or whatever to work and get dirty or to use your brightness or your education to help someone else or to help invent or to just use anything that you can do, whether it's physical or mental, to help one another.
Okay.
And I guess another thing that's happened during my lifetime would be like Vietnam. Vietnam was going on when I was in high school, and a lot of the young guys I'm in school with that are facing having to be called in for the draft and have mixed emotions about what to do. Some of them want to take salt tablets to try to promote their blood pressure to be up when they would go for their physicals. I think we, you know, we hate to see one another go and get killed. And, but I'm afraid it's a way that we, a necessity that we have to do for our country, to, in order to keep our country what it is today and what it will be in the future. I think Vietnam of, in the 70s is what we're kind of experiencing today with Iraq. A lot of our people are questioning, are we doing the right thing? But I think since September the 11th, with us being attacked on our own soil, that we're doing what we have got to do. If we do not show that what's being done or what someone wants to do to hurt us or other countries just willfully go and hurt and kill people for no reason, I don't see where we've got any choice but to take a stand and to continue to do what we're doing. I mean, it's not easy. Who wants us to say we want all of our young men to go and die for our country and you and me? But it has taken whether they died for Vietnam, World War II, or the Alamo. It all stems to what we have to do to be able to continue our way of life and to keep America strong and for other people who are living in countries that don't have what the rights like we do here, would be able to come and have them. And for us that have always had these rights, but never really looked at them and understood what we do have, for us to really think about it and know what we have and to be proud of it and to do right by it. Another thing I think you should cover in North Carolina history is your tobacco. Well, tobacco's been brought over here by the colonies, and with the Lost Colony and the different colonies with our North Carolina case, tobacco has grown and been very popular in North Carolina for all of these many, many, many years. And with me growing up in a tobacco farm family, it's been a lot of changes. Now, it's not an easy change. It's not one that I think we just really, it's been one to just say this is what we want to do. But I think as time has grown on during my life, I can see now, for 2004, that tobacco has got to change. It's, we've got to learn new ways to make a living and to give that up and grow something different. But it's been a long learning lesson, but I think it's something that we do need to change.
And how about the tobacco allotment system? How do you feel about that?
Well, I was hoping of a buyout, but I don't think there will be a buyout. But with what tobacco allotment I have had, I have recently just sold my tobacco allotment to put a closure on it, to get what I thought I could get out of it, but to put a closure on it. But I think that's the thing to do.
How long have you held that allotment?
This tobacco allotment that I have recently sold, I have had it since 1986. It was a tobacco allotment from farmland from my grandmother's estate that I had inherited in 1986. And I have rented it out all of this time, but with the different talks of a buyout and so forth. I've been waiting, hoping that there would be one. But now I've just reconciled that I could just sell it.
Okay.
The other thing I think that North Carolina history that should be taught is the women's role in politics. In the past recent years, the women's politics in North Carolina, I think it's been a good positive thing with Elizabeth Gold especially in running. I think she's a very smart, intelligent person, and she has a lot going for her. I think she's a good role model. I think that whatever office she seeks, she's someone to be heard and reckoned with. I really like Elizabeth Gold, and I think she's been a good positive figure for women, and has really lived up to that. And I hope that she will continue, and who knows what may happen as years go by. Meg Scott Phillips, she was elected for the agricultural position, and she was elected in there after Mr. Graham. And I really had high hopes for Meg Scott Phillips, and I think she really did some good positive things for the farming community. I even liked our new changes with the organization that she was involved with for our fairgrounds, the changes that were done. But with her arrest and her conviction of doing things that were against the law and accepting money, I'm very, very disappointed. And I feel like that has really been a very big drawback, a big, huge drawback for women in the political scene, where it could have been so positive, but the fact that it has been proven and she has been convicted of wrongdoing has been a big, major drawback. It's where women have progressed. It's really going to take us back.
Well, I'd really like to thank you for your time and your gift of your experiences and memories to this program and to this project. Once again, this interview was conducted on the 10th of April, 2004, with Harriet Ann Daniel Keith in her home in Hillsborough, North Carolina.